Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution of the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Welcome to the Capital Connection. I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us today is New York State Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver, a Democrat who has represented the 64th District since 1977 and who honors us with his presence from time to time, for which we are eternally grateful. Shelley Silver, welcome back to the program.
Delighted to be with you, Alan, and your listeners.
Okay, so the budget got passed. It got passed on time. Who won? Who lost? Who had to eat mud?
I think the people of the state of New York won. This was a good news budget for New Yorkers. We're holding the line on spending, but we stayed within the 2% spending cap. No new taxes, no new fees, but we are funding vital programs, including promised 4% increase in education and health care programs.
How do you do 4% increase in education, Shelley Silver, when, in fact, the budget has been held to 2%?
We did it by cutting other areas,
okay.
by streamlining other areas, and that basically was it.
Tell us what it was like to be in the room with those other two guys, the majority leader of the Senate, Dean Skelos, you and the governor. I read somewhere that the Skelos wouldn't come in the room with you. Is that true?
Well, we did a lot by telephone.
Okay.
So, the room was, limited. Room meetings. We did a lot by telephone, a lot by staff, and a lot of rank and file members did a lot. On day one, I came out and said, it's time to help community colleges. It's a place where an economic downturn, people go to get their education skills upgraded, their job skills upgraded, and we have to help them. And we put in for the first time in the last 5 years, $150 increase per full-time equivalent, which is basically per student, full-time student, for community colleges in the SUNY system and the CUNY system. That was very significant. It was something we said we were going to do, and we did it.
Was anybody against it? Were the Republicans against it, or was it sort of coming together here?
Like everything, when you stay within a 2% spending cap, it's an issue of priorities. So we put it out there. The Republicans would have liked to do less. I think the governor might have liked to do less. But we insisted on, actually, we put out 200 and we compromised at 150.
Well, there was something, Sheldon Silver, in the budget that I didn't like. I didn't like the idea that our controller, a very good controller, Tom DiNapoli, who does pre-audits on some major contracts, was told he couldn't do those pre-audits anymore. The governor's people and others said, you can do it after the fact, but that's letting the horse run out of the barn, isn't it?
Well, not necessarily. First of all, we limited the restrictions on pre-audits to contracts under a certain amount of money. I think it was under $4 or $5 million.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't a total elimination of pre-audit. He still has the ability to audit large contracts, and he continues in his role of, post-auditing all contracts. So it was, again, it's a matter of compromise. People think we have to enter these contracts faster. We can't wait for the pre-audit process to take place on small contracts. Still has the post-audit ability, and we limited the amount so that on large contracts there's still the pre-audit possibility.
Now, Speaker, a lot of people don't understand this whole business about what happened to the civil service and the organized labor and Tier 6. Maybe you could precise that and explain it to us.
Well, it's just clear that, the government has decided that it has to save some money on its employees. And, you know, the governor negotiated a contract with the unions that limited amounts of increase, including holding 2 years of freezes of no increase as a result of the economic crisis. And, you know, it was felt that to build in the next layer of public employees would have somewhat lesser benefits when it comes to pension benefits. Nobody who's currently working would have lost any benefits. It is only for people in the future who take employment in the public sector.
We've heard a lot about the labor unions are very angry at the governor for this budget and at some of the other folks. What's the feedback you're getting?
Well, you know, they're angry about this piece, knowing it doesn't affect any current member of their unions and will only affect future members, people who will take employment knowing the conditions of employment. Now, the governor put out a plan that was significantly less than what was ultimately adopted. And this was, you know, again, a matter of compromise. Governor proposed going from 62 to 65 on retirement age. We compromised it at 63. The governor proposed that anybody making more than $30,000 would begin to see increases in their contribution to their pension. We compromised it at $45,000. So there was a lot of compromise from the original proposal that the unions were angry about. We made it a lot better. And there's no question that we still had to build in savings for the future.
Shelley Silver, what was left out of the budget? In other words, what would you have liked to see in there that wasn't there?
Well, it's not a matter of what was left out. There's a whole substantive session still to go. One of the things I've always said as a priority is raising the minimum wage in New York State. I think it's very important. I think it's a great economic stimulus. People who earn now $7.25 an hour, $7.50 an hour, if you give them a little more money, it's going right back into the economy. It's not something that's going to go into savings banks or, you know, or investment. It's going right back in the economy. It's going to be an extra shirt, an extra pair of pants for the children, an extra pair of shoes, something of that nature. And it stimulates other jobs and other economic activity.
Sounds like a good idea to me, but what about the governor and the majority leader?
The majority leader's indicated he thinks it's a job killer. I disagree with that. I think there are studies on that that have shown that it's not. We intend to have a series of public hearings around the state and take testimony and prove that it's only a win-win for the state of New York and its employers to increase the minimum wage. The governor has said he's he likes the idea. He'd like to see the practicalities of it and study its impact. So he hasn't said he supports it. He has indicated the concept is not something that he dislikes.
Shouldn't this be a no-brainer for a Democratic governor?
You know, we're living in difficult economic times. We're living in a time when jobs are scarce, unemployment is high, and I guess you want to make sure that you're not adding to the unemployment problem.
So are we going to play blackjack down in your district on the Lower East Side, Shelley? Will there be a casino down there?
There won't be a casino down there. Both I and the governor are committed to keep casinos out of densely populated areas. We don't want to see somebody be able to go out on their lunch hour and lose a month's pay on their lunch hour. So we'd rather see it in areas where people have to travel, where it's a destination, where they don't go past the casino every day on their way to work or on their way from work.
So where will it be?
I would like to see probably areas like the Catskill region of the state, maybe the Finger Lakes, maybe Lake George. I'm not excluding any area by saying it, but it's those kinds of destinations? Were there other things doing? That would be the right place. Look, I'm not a fan of casino gaming. It's just gotten to the point where New Yorkers are going to Connecticut, they're going to New Jersey, they're going to Pennsylvania, in addition to going to Las Vegas, and they're leaving New York money in other states. We might as well capture the economic benefit of it.
Now, the governor wanted to close down the Javits Center, as I understood it, but that didn't make it into the budget. I've always liked the Javits Center. I like the West Side. Why can't we have the Javits Center?
Well, I think what the governor's proposal was to not to start to sell off the land around the Javits Center. And what was shown to the governor was that as long as the Javits Center continues to operate, then you need that land around it to be a staging area for the shows that are there. When the New York Automobile Show will be there next week, they use the land around it for the trailers to pull in and offload the cars that are on display, just as an example. It's one of the biggest shows in the Javits Center, and it's staying there. There is no other facility right now. If there's a plan for another facility at that time, that's the time to consider a redevelopment in the Javits area.
Well, we Manhattanites like the Javits Center. It goes back a long way with us. Why should it be replaced with something out there in Queens?
Well, the question is whether it'll be more attractive and attract more business and you know, help the tourism industry in New York. That's the only question. Will we attract bigger and better shows?
Why not both as opposed to one or the other?
Well, I don't think you're going to be, you know, the studies show you can't support both with those shows. So that's going to really be the question. Is it economically feasible or not?
How did it all come out, Sheldon Silver, on teacher evaluations? I know there was a big brouhaha. The governor wanted teacher evaluations publicly. You actually stood up for the teachers and said, we shouldn't be, as I understood it anyway, we shouldn't be, you know, picking on, scapegoating our teachers. Well, how did it all come out?
Well, it hasn't come out yet, but it's something the governor's committed to taking up in the future, and the Senate and the Assembly are as well. I mean, it's an interesting issue. There's no other state employee whose personnel records are foilable.
Foilable meaning you can ask for them. You can ask to see what they are. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There are no other state or municipal employees. You cannot check how the local cop is doing, how the fireman is doing. You can only check teachers' evaluations. Now, there and truthfully, there's something to be weighed there. It's the right of privacy of the employee versus, I say, the right of the parent to know how the school is performing and how particular grades in the school are performing. I think with all employees, it turns out the right of privacy prevails, and we don't have a foilable police officer's personnel record or fire officer's personnel record or somebody who works at the Motor Vehicle Bureau. Their personnel record is not foilable, as far as that goes.
Well, I don't get something, Shelley. The governor says he's going to be the person who is, you know, basically representing our students and our parents, and yet he's the guy who basically is being very tough on the budget in terms of where the money is coming. So I don't really understand how you can have it both ways. And not only that, but as you pointed out once, not that long ago, isn't the Board of Regents doing a pretty good job here, Mrs. Tisch and the rest?
I think they are. I think, you know, in difficult circumstances across a wide spectrum of the state with its great diversity, they are, you know, raising standards, trying to get New York students educated, college ready, work ready. And I think they do a pretty good job on it. I think Commissioner King does an outstanding job, as does the Board of Regents. Having said that, I think the governor, you know, has this, in many cases, he happens to be in sync with Commissioner King to some extent. And, you know, I think their purpose is to bring a sense of evaluation, a sense of transparency to the Board of Education across the state, the various boards of education. Some of it's difficult. It's difficult to do. On teacher evaluation, I think you probably need a method by which parents can know how a particular teacher or a particular grade performs in a particular school. But it doesn't mean that, you know, some newspaper should have a picture of a teacher in there and their evaluation, which in most instances is subjective, on the front page of that newspaper.
Yeah, and I often wonder about that. I mean, if a teacher goes into a really stressful school situation where kids who have not been able to learn in the past, and now he's going to be or she's going to be evaluated in the same way and publicly evaluated as somebody who teaches in Scarsdale, doesn't seem right to me.
Well, that's you know, part of the problem, the variables. You know, the teacher in a school next to a homeless shelter where the students come in October and they're gone in January, just as an example. The teacher in a neighborhood that, you know, new immigrants are arriving on a regular basis and the students are thrown into the classroom and, you know, don't speak the language very well, and that teacher is going to be evaluated based on the performance of those students that are new arrivals to this country. Those are some of the variables. I mean, I'm just giving extreme examples of some of the variables that, you know, just one size doesn't fit all.
Let's talk redistricting. I've always felt that there should be an outside group. You once told me that you, in fact, had passed such a bill, an outside group drawing the districts. You had passed a bill years ago in the assembly. What became of all of that?
The reality is we should take... you know, I'm not a supporter of an outside group. What I am a supporter of, it should be a bipartisan process. It should not be an advantage, a gotcha, because you have the majority in a particular house. In the assembly, we didn't work that way. As a matter of fact, all the objections filed in court proceedings, 99% of them are against the Senate plan, not the assembly plan, because we took into account and took in our Republican colleagues and actually helped them in drawing lines the way they saw fit within the guidelines of the New York State Constitution and the U.S. Supreme Court rulings. So we didn't wind up with the kinds of objections that exist to the Senate plan.
I don't get something. There's so many Democrats in New York State. You guys in the Assembly have done so well. It's overwhelmingly a Democratic House. How can it be that in the other House, in the Senate, the Republicans are ahead by one or two votes? It has to come down to the gerrymander, doesn't it?
Not really. First of all, there's a greater longevity and a greater continuity in the Senate. Ultimately, no matter how you gerrymander, you can't get, you know, there's only so much you can do. And the reality is that ultimately there are more Democrats in New York than there are Republicans. And you can only spread them so far. I mean, as far as, you know, every statewide office is held by a Democrat because of the overwhelming quality of the candidates, but also the fact that many people in New York State, a great plurality, identify themselves with the Democratic Party.
And yet you have Republicans running the Senate?
That's correct.
Now, you mentioned something which is longevity. Sure, a lot of those Republican senators have been here for a long time. Some of them are quite old now. You, Sheldon Silver, and the Democrats have prevailed in a couple of special elections where Republicans have done quite well in the past. What do you make of that?
Well, I think, you know, the message is clear, what we stand for. Republicans have a unique ability. We can't define the Democratic Party and why they are not here, not in Washington, and the differences between the parties. All you have to do is elect some Republicans and the public finds out the differences very clearly. The Republicans are very good at defining the differences, and the public swings back to being to supporting Democrats.
Do you think Obama's in trouble in this election cycle?
I think it's a close race. I think ultimately he wins it, but I think it's a close race.
Do you think that the middle class has a particular role that is going to define this election?
I think definitely, and the economy will definitely define the election. You tell me what the unemployment rate will be in September or October, and you can tell the margin of election by that, how much we reduce the unemployment rate between now and then, you know, how many people are filing for unemployment claims. Those are the numbers that are going to matter in the end result.
Shelley, who in the end would you rather see? This is an honesty question, you know, a lightning question. Who would you rather see as the Republican candidate, Romney or any of the other guys?
Well, obviously, the further to the right they are, that's who I'd like to see. You know, Romney is trying to play that role, which presents, I believe, great difficulty in his campaign because who he is, what he's done, and, you know, where he professes to be are rather inconsistent. Even the Republicans criticize him for being able to change his position from day to day.
So in the end, if Obama does very well in New York State, will that be helpful to Senate and Assembly candidates in New York?
It depends where he does well. I mean, the Democrats, you know, in New York City, the Democrats tend to win anyway. And if he produces a big majority in New York City that carries him through the state, obviously that top of the ticket role, Democrats will do well anyway in New York City. The question is how he does in what we call our marginal or swing districts. Some of the more rural areas, some of the suburban areas, and that will be the determinant on, you know, who controls the Senate.
Do you see any way in which the state Senate could go Democratic this time?
I think if you have some of the far-right candidates of the Republican Party, yes.
Do you see any way in which, if Obama, President Obama, does well in the national election, that both the House and the Senate could go Democratic? We have a Democratic Senate by just a little. Any chance the House could come back?
I think there's a chance. You only need a switch of about 50.
It's a lot.
Of course, it's a lot. Obviously, New York would have to be a big part of that.
Yes.
We probably have to produce 4 or 5 of those 50 here in New York. It's doable, and it'll be an interesting race. Again, depends who's on the top of the ticket, on the Republican ticket. I think if some of their far-right wingers are there, it's definitely doable.
And my last question is this. In my house, in our Seder, I have to do the cooking. Do you have to do that in your house?
No.
Who does it?
We make reservations.
As the old joke goes. Shelley Silver, is there anything else you want to say that I haven't asked you about?
Alan, you are so thorough as an interviewer.
Our guest on the Capital Connection has been the inimical, the one and only New York State Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver. Speaker Silver, thank you so much for joining us. It's always fun to have you here.
Delighted to be with you.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. Ian Pickus is producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio, in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign. Online at nyscasa.org. We'll be right back.